Good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it! And it is! Peter Wills!
Hello, everyone. Oh, my goodness me. Craig Storrid here, live, fresh, less than 5 minutes after the end of an epic penalty shootout. Aston Villa beat Lille on penalties from nowhere, really, and are now through to the semi-finals of a European competition for the very first time since 1982, which, dare I say, was before I was even born. So this is literally history in the making. I'm literally beside myself with joy, excitement, fear, paranoia, all of it. I think I experienced every emotion. And I'm delighted to be joined by my friend and gather round again colleague. Please say hello to Andy.
Hi, guys. Hi, Craig. That was quite something, wasn't it? I totally given up on that game and the Conference League and everything else. I put in our group chat that I'd fully convinced myself that this was just a warm-up for Sunday and it didn't really matter. But no, it's absolutely incredible. No, really chuffed.
I am completely overwhelmed. I don't have anything prepared. I have no notes, which is not that unusual, but I'm literally just giddy. I don't know where to start, so let's try and just start with the feeling. Let's capture it for a moment, because this, again, has never happened in my lifetime. For some of you listening and watching here with us, I'm sure it's never happened in your lifetime. Aston Villa are European semi-finalists, Andy. How do you, and I know that you were born in 1982, not to give the game away, but you certainly were not a you were alive in 1982 is what I mean. But you certainly weren't necessarily fully plugged in to the Aston Villa story at that time. So kind of a first for you also. How do you put this experience into words?
I mean, it's just immense, isn't it? I mean, it felt like, I think at the start of last week before the first leg, it just felt like the feeling of it all, the feeling of this tournament suddenly became quite serious. Quarterfinal was on the horizon. And I think when you get to the quarterfinals of any competition, it suddenly kicks in, doesn't it? Right, we've got a chance here. And yeah, I mean, to actually do it and get through, there's been an awful lot of talk about this tournament as well, that Villa are favourites and Villa should win it and all this kind of thing. And we know that this isn't, you know, this isn't how these European competitions work. At any of the three, you know, we saw Man City and Arsenal, who were very much favourites potentially for the Champions League. They both went out in the quarterfinals last night. You know, so you can't take anything for granted. And I think maybe we had sort of thought, well, we're probably going to be in the final of this one. And I think something this tie has shown us is that there are an awful lot of good teams on the continent, and very, very technically good and well coached, and you have to be really good to beat them. We weren't really good tonight at all, but we found a way, and goodness knows how we've done it.
Yeah, and let's rewind a little bit and talk a little bit about this feeling and this experience. Now, in terms of the initial situation, certainly one of Villa's most almost absent would be the way I would describe it. Absent performances in the whole of the season in the first half, deservedly went a goal or two down. What did you make of that first half? I think we slightly improved in the second half, but again, that was a very low bar. Andy, what did you make of the starting lineup? What did you make of the 11? Obviously, we saw the return of Matty Cash, and what an important return that would turn out to be. Diego Carlos dropping to the bench after the Arsenal game. Nicolò Zaniolo retained his place starting on the left-hand side, but unfortunately, he became our latest injury casualty to add to the absolute laundry list of people we've got out injured. Now had to be taken off on 28th minute, replaced by Morgan Rogers. Moussa Diaby started again and played up top, and John McGinn played what looked to be right midfield with Youri Tielemans and Douglas Suarez, who of course is not suspended for Europe but is serving a two-match suspension in the Premier League. What did you make of the lineup, and what did you make of that first half, Andy? What were you thinking?
I mean, it was, I think the lineup was quite strong. I think it, in terms of what we've seen in Europe this season, I thought it was very strong, very positive, strong as a midfield as we could have selected. Interesting to see us go back to Matty Cash at right back. I think that was, you know, possibly with a view to obviously, you know, getting him some good minutes under his belt, which he did. But at the same time, yes, yeah, strong lineup. And you know, the only possible difference I would have gone for would have been to pick Rogers instead of Zaniolo, but it's just because I think he's better and he's been playing well lately. But yeah, really, really strong. Understandable that Bailey wasn't playing, and you know, his leg, you know, looked pretty strapped up, but he came on and made an impact. So yeah, very strong lineup. But we just never got going, did we? We just didn't get into the game at all in the first half. It was very slow. It was very predictable, and we weren't clinical with our passing. I think the main thing about the way we play, with that slow, sort of very slow tempo, which then converts very quickly as we kind of go through the gears, is the passing has to be absolutely bang on, and it really wasn't. I think we suffered from Lille just being very quick into the press and all over us really, in many ways. So it was no surprise when they scored.
Some tactical fouls by Lille. I called it in the group chat the old Fernandinho foul, formerly of Man City fame, where every time Villa looked like they move, and these weren't necessarily even threatening attacks, but any time Morgan Rogers or Diaby broke the lines in that first half, it seemed as though it was instructional from Paulo Fonseca that we that Lille were to take out our players, and the referee wasn't booking anyone to start with, and then all of a sudden he had a yellow card orgy all to himself when he was just pulling yellow cards out for fun. The first one going to Zaniolo for what didn't seem to be much of anything, and then eventually towards the end of the first half he did start to book some of the other players. Emi Martinez found himself in the book. Ollie Watkins, I think a total of six Aston Villa players found themselves in the book. We don't spend a lot of time on our channel talking about referees, Andy, because that's just not really our thing, unless it's absolutely crucial. But just give me your thoughts briefly on the official before I move on and erase him from my memory.
Yeah, I think he collected some tokens on the back of Kellogg's packs, didn't he, to referee this game? Goodness knows, I've no idea. He just didn't seem to have any kind of a feel for what was happening at all, for the game and how it was being played. There was some fouling. You get fouling, you know, you get coming together, you get time wasting, you get all these things, but he was just throwing his cards around like confetti. The least said about him the better, but he ended up not costing us. He gave a couple of decisions in our favour at crucial moments as well. So I think it was more sort of luck than judgment really that he didn't overly cause us and the other thing they said on the TV over here, the TNT coverage, was that none of the players booked will actually miss the semi-final, I think, so that's a positive as well. So
a big, big positive. Let's move on from the referee. In the 15th minute, Lille took the lead, Andy. It was, you have to say, a very well-crafted move, and I've been personally very impressed with Lille, I have to say, in both legs, probably in my giddiness and celebration of being the victorious. It would be churlish of us not to take a moment to commend Lille. They were good value for their 2-0 lead. They were good value at Villa Park. They played some lovely football, and they are truly an excellent football team. I dare say we've Aston Villa, without sounding braggadocious, we've brushed aside some Premier League sides and some sides, you know, of the stature of Ajax in this competition so far this season. But Lille were certainly made of sterner stuff, and I think they did themselves proud. None more so than Youssef Yazici, if I'm saying that correctly. I'm probably not. A really well-worked move across into the box by Gudmundsson. And a first-time finish into the corner by Yazici. No chance for Emi Martinez. Villa 1-0 down. A well-crafted goal, Andy, or are you pointing fingers at somebody who wasn't doing their job from a Villa standpoint?
No, not on the goal. I thought it was an excellent goal, and you know, really well finished. You know, really not dissimilar to McGinn's goal in the first, other than it being not being from a set piece. Similar type of finish to McGinn's goal last week. But I thought the only thing I would say was it was absolutely coming. There was, you know, Villa had not started well. They had no control on the ball. They were giving the ball away. And it wasn't a surprise. So on the overall kind of first opening bit of the game, it was coming, and you could clearly see you know, we weren't on top of things, but no, excellent goal, really, really well worked goal, and really clinical finish.
If Lille had lots of questions in that first half, we didn't really have any answers. With your Villa hat on, Andy, what do you think was the problem? I opined and suggested that we'd seen some of this kind of stuff before from Villa, and that our inexperience in these major European contests were beginning to show. Certainly, we saw some of the players buckle under the pressure of the atmosphere in the Legia Warsaw contest, where we were defeated 3-2. Certainly, we saw some players wilt a little bit, or you know, feeling not quite themselves, should I say, in the away leg at Ajax in that cauldron-like atmosphere. And likewise today in Lille, a completely feverish atmosphere. Emi Martinez, obviously the pantomime villain for his exploits for Argentina in the World Cup, beating France in the final. Of course, some of his celebrations and I think carrying around some kind of effigy of Kylian Mbappe, etc., all that good stuff. Even he dropped a cross in the first few minutes of the game and seemed a little bit unnerved. Am I being too kind in saying that this was just them lacking experience and struggling in the major atmosphere, or is it something more sinister you think that was going on with Aston Villa today, particularly in that first half?
No, again, I think before the Arsenal game at the weekend, I think we were seeing these types of performances. Certainly the Tottenham match was not dissimilar to this. You know, they pushed us back. They got after us. They put us into difficult situations when we're trying to play out and play our game. They weren't, you know, we were going through the process of trying to bait the press, and they weren't having any of it. They were just waiting until we inevitably were a bit loose in possession or played a bit of a bad pass. And they just had the perfect kind of game plan, really. I just thought their energy, Lille's energy was so much higher than Villa's. Villa looked sluggish. They looked tired. They looked like they were trying to manage the game rather than kind of go for it, really. And I suppose some of that is to be expected. But after the high of Sunday afternoon, you know, at the Emirates, and such a great performance, I think we perhaps thought we'd clicked into gear a little bit again, but no, it wasn't a vintage performance by any stretch. It was probably one of our worst performances of the season, and certainly our worst performance probably in Europe this season.
And I think it's fair to say, when you're having those poor performances, and it was one of our worst performances, you just kind of sometimes have to stay in the game. And we managed to do that. There seemed to be a lot of time wasting from Emi Martinez, even when the tie was drawn. He got booked in the 39th minute by the yellow card happy referee. My view of that was things were not going well, and Emi was either taking it upon himself to make sure we got through to half time, relatively unscathed with the tie still level. Was that your interpretation as well, Andy, or was that an Unai Emery directive, or do you think that Martinez was taking matters into his own hands with that time wasting, which did seem odd for to be doing that when we were level in the tie and needed a goal?
Yeah, I don't think he was necessarily time wasting. I think I felt like the ref had perhaps misinterpreted the fact, because Emi was on the ball an awful lot during that first half, and a lot of it was spent standing there with the ball at his feet, trying to encourage the Lille forwards to come after him. And of course, you know, when you're doing that, it can stick in a referee's mind that this guy is being slow here, is time wasting. I don't think it was when the ball was actually dead, and he was, you know, when obviously time wasting would be taken into account, I don't think he really was time wasting. He perhaps did it on that one occasion, like you say, perhaps to just, you know, get to half time, just to break up the momentum a little bit, but I don't think it was anything more than that, really. And I think the ref misinterpreted it, in fairness.
Fair enough. And to get to half time, we did. We didn't get there without another yellow card, this one for Luca Dean. And then Lille come out much as they did in the first half. Were you surprised not to see any changes, Andy? Were you surprised that we didn't see any kind of shifts, bearing in mind how poor the first half was? Because unfortunately, Lille came out much the same as they did, and they got a deserved second goal, doubled their lead on the 67th minute when Benjamin Andre rose like a salmon to score the second uncontested header in this tie. Villa conceded 3 goals in this tie, and 66% of them were free headers from corners. It's difficult to condone. It's difficult to comprehend. It looked like we'd learned our lesson against Arsenal, because Arsenal are one of the best teams in the league at set pieces, and we did really well at the Emirates on Sunday, as we needed to. But again, another set piece, another free header, another goal against, Andy. 2-0 down on the night. 3-2 down on aggregate. Were you fearing the worst at this point?
Oh, absolutely. I thought it had gone. Like you say, the second half didn't really start any better. And I was certainly hoping for the game of two halves, adage to come in, really, and for us to kick on a bit in the second half, as we did on Sunday, and it never really happened. So, yeah, when we conceded the second goal, it felt like, we're always good for a goal, aren't we? But it just didn't look like it was going to happen. We'd not created anything really up to that point, and it just felt like Lille would, if anything, go on and get one or two more and make it a bit more comfortable. But it was really disappointing. You know, another near post header, and like I said, the smallest man on the pitch sort of out jumping Konsa and Torres and whoever else in there. So, you know, really, really weak. It's a good header, you know, maybe slightly lucky as well, that it just went in off the post, but they absolutely deserved to be ahead at that point, for sure.
They did, and they were. And Unai Emery wasted no time whatsoever in hooking Moussa Diaby and bringing on Leon Bailey. Straight after the goal, Leon Bailey with a leg heavily strapped up, heavily taped, I believe is his knee area, perhaps certainly carrying a knock there. Moussa Diaby, Andy, we're going back and forth on Moussa Diaby. He had that period at the start of the season where he was electrifying. He had that big dip in the middle of the season. Then he was our player of the season for player of the month for March, with I think a couple of goals and three assists, really crucial in getting us lots of Premier League points in that month. And then I dare say, both away at Arsenal and also certainly away tonight against Lille, Moussa Diaby not exactly covering himself in glory, Andy. I think my main contention with him is that he is so lightweight that he doesn't contribute defensively. I don't think he's lazy or he's standing around with his hands on his hips. He does try, but he's just not effective, really, for me, in terms of any kind of physical contact he gets the worst of. And obviously he's small and he's diminutive, but we've seen Leon Bailey being able to build himself up. He's been much better like that. You see a player like, who's a good example of this? Like, well, even Emi Buendia, our own Emi Buendia, again, smaller frame, but still competes and gets physically involved. Sadio Mane, another example, the Liverpool, former Liverpool and Southampton forward, who, again, similar physical profile to Moussa Diaby, but really stocky and cagey and getting involved and winning duels. That is my frustration with Moussa Diaby. I feel like if he's not doing well on the ball, and he hasn't done well on the ball for the last couple of games, that he doesn't really bring you much else, and then he becomes a bit of a passenger. What are your thoughts on that? Am I being unfair, or is that a reasonable critique in your view?
It's not unfair. I just feel that, first of all, he plays, when he comes on, he does play a slightly different role to Bailey. Bailey plays more as the wide man in the four across the midfield. When Diaby comes on, he plays more as the second striker. And I think that is probably because, believe it or not, Leon Bailey's defensive work and being able to help cover his fullback and so on is actually superior to Diaby's, which seems strange to say. But yeah, I think the problem he's having is he's playing. I think he'd be better off running from deeper. But because he's sort of playing almost on the last line, he's not getting the ball in good areas, and he's kind of running down blind alleys all the time. And I just don't think it helps his game. I think he needs to be picking the ball up deeper and running at players. And I think when he first early on in the season, he was kind of playing as the one of the two tens almost, or one of the two. Sort of wide players in the box. It was him and McGinn, and it worked a lot better for him because he was able to occupy the central areas of the attacking midfield areas, if you like. And I thought he was excellent at that point, but since then he's become this kind of second striker, and I just think when he's getting the ball, he's already under pressure, and he hasn't got the space and the power, if you like, to be able to make any inroads, and I think that's where he's struggling. Whenever he gets the ball deeper and runs at defenders, he's electric.
He is electric, but again, he wasn't electric tonight, and not alone, actually, in terms of some of the critique online. It wasn't only Moussa Diaby that was getting some heat on the old Villa X timeline, if you will. I mean, not that there was many standout performances, but certainly there were some people displeased with Matty Cash. And of course, it is eventually Matty Cash who not only kind of had our best chance earlier with our best move of the game, with McGinn did a nice little drag back to him, and he smashes one just wide of the angle of the crossbar and the post. And Matty Cash also stung the goalkeeper's fingers. Their goalkeeper was excellent, by the way, I think, tonight. And it was Matty Cash again that pops up with the goal. The ball's played in. Box office John competes for a header, doesn't win it. But the Lille defender and the goalkeeper get themselves into an absolute calamity. Chevalier and I want to say it was Benteleb, wasn't it? Chevalier gets clattered by Benteleb, his own player, drops the ball. John Duran involved in the mix. The ball breaks to Matty Cash and he absolutely smashes the ball, thumps it, a very good finish actually, thumps it into the opposing net. It's all of a sudden 2-1 on the night. Aston Villa cannot believe their luck. I couldn't believe our luck. We didn't deserve it, but we got it. And it was that man, Matty Cash. What are your thoughts on the goal and the Polish Cafu, Andy?
Yeah, he popped up, didn't he? Like at Middlesbrough early in the season. He's the man on the spot. He'd already had a couple of sighters, hadn't he, before that. And he's just put the ball on target, hasn't he? And it's just flown in off the defender. And it was the only way we were going to score. I think you glossed over our striker pretending to be a winger rather than our winger pretending to be a striker there, Ollie Watkins. Getting into the wide area, brilliant bit of play, absolutely brilliant play to get that ball into the danger zone, and where obviously Duran has confused everyone by being there. And the ball's come out an absolute treat, hasn't it, to Cash, and his eyes have lit up.
Box office John is always involved, Andy. Always involved. He's chaos follows.
That's it, and that's why he was on there, and he has created that. But I mean, for the most part, I thought he was very reserved. He was just doing his job. He was getting the ball. He was laying it off. He was playing little passes here and there. And getting into the area, and you know, I think gave us something, you know, to kind of hang our hat on to, so to speak, from an attacking point of view. But I mean, Matty Cash is a really strange thing, because he's got nearly as many songs as Birmingham City in the whole team, and he's always considered as the fall guy, really, in the team. But so often he does something that helps us, or you know, if he comes off the bench, he changes the game. And we have to bear in mind he's played 120 minutes tonight, scored his penalty, sorry for jumping ahead. He's not played since before the international break, so he's put in a hell of a shift there.
Yes,
and he's done his job tonight for me.
You're getting your revenge for me going off piece so many times for you on the regular show there, Andy. I'm like a wild stallion out there. I cannot be tamed. Yes, Andy. I mean, this is the thing. I think Matty Cash is really popular. I love Matty Cash. I think he's a great guy. I would love to go out with him for a beer, and I think he's been an excellent signing for Aston Villa. Not a good signing, an excellent signing for the money paid and for helping us get to the next level. The thing I would question is I'm not sure whether he is going to be Villa's starting... Well, I don't think he is Villa's starting fullback anymore. I think that's Ezri Konsa, and I'm not sure he's going to be Villa's starting fullback moving forward, because I'm not sure that he does everything that Unai Emery needs him to do. But that doesn't mean he has to be bombed out, or he has to be a figure of fun. He can still be an amazing part of our squad and pop up with goals like he did tonight. Let's not forget the double goals, the brace he got away against Burnley, the winner against Middlesbrough in the cup, where we found our beautiful gem Morgan Rogers. So, I mean, it's always very binary, isn't it, with Villa fans and football fans in general. It's either feast or famine. It's either you're the best player in the world and should be, should be getting awards, or you're rubbish, get out of my club. There's very little middle ground. But for you, Andy, go on.
Sorry, Craig. We need everyone that's available, that can pull a pair of boots on in that squad at the moment, because we've just obviously, I was thinking that the benefit of not going through tonight would have been having two less games, you know, and maybe just being able to focus a little bit on securing fourth place. But now, I mean, we're going to have those games. We're going to have a really difficult trip to somewhere, and you know, Turkey or Greece, and we're going to need everyone. And Matty Cash is an absolute diamond because he will play in the midfield or he'll play it right back. He'll come off the bench. He'll do a job. He'll sit in and defend, or he'll go forward and attack. He's an absolute diamond, and we need those players. We need everybody. So I'm not, you know, no one should be turning on any players at this stage. We absolutely need everyone in that squad.
It is a problem. They continue to drop like flies, Andy. We've just lost Moreno for potentially 2 or 3 weeks. We've just lost Zaniolo, who was who hobbled off with an injury. Another guy who's seemed to be playing with duct tape all over his body to try and keep him together again. So, and then you look to the bench tonight, and I couldn't help but wonder in some of my pain when we were losing. To have Jacob Ramsey to come on here and help us out, to have Emi Buendia to come on and to just create something, or even just to get a little bit busy and throw a bit of energy on the pitch. Oh, to have Boubacar Kamara on to just get a little bit more control in midfield here, which is obviously one of Boubacar Kamara's main facets. Oh, to have a Tyrone Mings who might be able to head a football from a corner. You know, so it's lost, and I've made this point before, so I won't belabor it again. I think it's been lost on lots of the mainstream media just how well we're doing with just so many setbacks, injuries, suspensions, so on and so forth. Just an ungodly amount of these things. But we look at the bench tonight, and after we brought on Leon Bailey, you're really looking at goalkeepers, defenders, and kids. I mean, it's going to be Tim Orogbunam. It's Duran, who's still a kid, really. It's Kellyman. It's Kane Kessler-Hayden. It's Clement Longley. There just wasn't a lot there for Unai Emery to change the game when it wasn't going so well. But what he did do was he did substitute John McGinn. Not McGinn's best day at the office. Was that a surprise to you, Andy, or would it be a question of, you know, at that point we were playing so badly, anyone could have come off and couldn't have complained too much?
Yeah, I think it's a case of legs as well. And I think, obviously, every game, whether he plays well or not, McGinn runs himself into the ground, and we're going to need him on Sunday because Douglas Luiz won't be playing Sunday. So I think it's more to do with that, really. But he did have a bad game. He was giving the ball away a lot. Just things weren't... He was doing his usual things, but things weren't kind of joining up for him. And I think that, you know, that in the end, they said, well, we want the extra striker on. McGinn's having a bit of a shocker. Let's save his legs a bit.
Yeah, and do you think that's simply just down to the running of the Arsenal game and just so much in the legs of John McGinn? And John McGinn, ironically now, will be one of our fresher players for the Bournemouth game, which we'll get to soon. So 2-1, Villa against all odds are in it, and the game goes to extra time, Andy. And then the first half of extra time, it was kind of like a basketball game for the first few minutes. The Lille attack followed by a Villa attack followed by a Lille attack followed by a Villa attack. And then Leon Bailey has the ball on the edge of the area. He spanks a wonderful drive, which is saved expertly by, again, Chevalier, who had a very lovely game, apart from that clash with Bentaleb. And Douglas Luiz, Andy, with the goal gaping, nods it into an empty net, or not so fast, my friend, nods it close enough to the goalkeeper where he can get a finger on it. And somehow, big credit to Chevalier here, this guy generates enough power on this save to, from the floor, by the way, with no center of gravity, no legs to just from his upper body strength, from the floor, generates enough power on that save to divert the ball over the crossbar. Did you begin to think it wasn't our day at that point, Andy? Are you going bad miss for Douglas Luiz or great save by Chevalier?
Yeah, I think he knew what he was trying to do, Dougie, but the ball hit the wrong part of his head and kind of went back at a different angle towards the goalkeeper. I think if he heads that straight, the way he was facing, it goes in the net because the keeper's in no man's land, really. So he gave him a chance, and yeah, I mean the keeper did well to push it over the bar. I think actually at that point I thought we looked like we're going to score here. You know, we just started, I think, to look like we were on top in the game. And I felt like, although the chance was missed, I thought we're starting to look like we're taking control here, and I think we'll create another couple of chances and we'll score. But it was just unlucky, I think, for Dougie. It just hit the wrong part of his head. He just misjudged it, didn't he?
He did just misjudge it, but there was no misjudgment from the rest of the team. Although we did have a couple of wobbles, a couple of half chances in the second half. The second half of extra time, I think, to be fair, both teams understandably were completely out on their feet. The main chance kind of falling, I guess it wasn't really even a chance. It was kind of a half chance in the last minute of the second half of extra time. Morgan Rogers works an opening on the left wing, crosses it in to John Duran, swivels and hits a volley. And unfortunately, it's straight at the goalkeeper. But I guess that's, again, credit to the goalkeeper. You have to be in the right place and the right time. And that was all she wrote. The referee had got to give his yellow card a rest for a moment. And it's full time, and it is penalty shootout time. And I'm thinking, we've got Emi Martinez. So I actually dare say that I produced the graphic soon saying that Villa won on penalties, and this might make me an idiot, but I produced a graphic straight away as soon as we went to penalties in that little gap, the graphic that's on the title of the show here, saying Villa win on pens, because there was just no way that I didn't see Emi Martinez saving at least two penalties, and Villa, I knew we'd score enough, and I thought that was it. As soon as it went to penalties, I believed that Villa were through. Was I, and I was right, but were you so confident, Andy, or did you have a little bit more pause?
No, I'm not. Never confident. I'm an Englishman. or an English football fan. I'm never confident when it comes to penalty shootouts. Although, yeah, Villa haven't been too bad over the years, have they? In terms of pens. At times, certainly won a few that I can think of.
From Tranmere onwards, we've been great.
Yeah, well, yeah, there was Inter Milan, wasn't there, and Bolton in the FA Cup, and obviously West Brom more recently. So, yeah, but I think, yeah, when you've got Emi Martinez, but then I was looking at the other guy in the other goal and thinking, he's had a good game tonight. He looks like he might save one or two as well, so... There was, there was that, and of course you talked about the pressure that it felt like the players were under from the crowd. That crowd was absolutely bouncing, quite literally, at times tonight. So it felt a little bit like, we might crumble, we might just not have enough in the legs and in the heart to get through it. But he's an absolute liability, isn't he?
Well, I was scared he was going to get sent off. I mean, I've got here in my notes that he may have got a yellow card, but maybe it's... I don't know what happened, but luckily he could stay on the field. So the penalty shootouts went thus. They explained it. Go ahead.
Craig. They explained it on TNT. Apparently, he did get another yellow card, but the cards after the game... are cancelled.
Oh.
So he got a yellow card, and obviously, so he got two yellow cards in the game, but
oh, that's a weird rule. Yeah, well, I didn't know what was going on. I was like, oh no, can we make a sub now? Can Robin Olsen or Gauchi come? I didn't know what was going on. And then it looked like the referee had changed his mind. But anyway, that's, hey, whatever. we'll take the W there and move on with our lives. Speaking of W, Belgian international Yuri Tielemans steps up for Aston Villa, strokes one home, 1-0. Bentaleb then steps up, saved by Emi Martinez. Ollie Watkins then steps up for Aston Villa, smashes one into the top corner, even though he did a John Terry-style slip on the penalty spot and then went to inspect his boots. Jonathan David then sends Emi Martinez the wrong way to bring it to 2-1. And Matty Cash, the aforementioned Matty Cash, steps into the breach, buries his penalty. I didn't have Matty Cash on my bingo card for being in Villa's first five penalty takers. Andy, did you?
No, but I didn't know who. I had no idea who was going to take them beyond Douglas Luiz, because obviously McGee had gone off. Watkins is traditionally absolutely dire. So I don't know if they picked them out of a hat. I'm not sure.
I thought Duran was, I was sure Duran was going to take one just because he seems to have that kind of, he seems to have that kind of chip on his shoulder that would be like a thing that he would do. But hey, anyway, Matty Cash slots it away. Then it's Angel Gomez scores as well. And then Leon Bailey has his penalty, not a great penalty, saved by the Lille goalkeeper, again, who had a brilliant game. And then Remy Cabella scores. Andy, what are you thinking there? Bailey's missed. We're back level. What was going through your head at that moment?
Well, do you know what? I completely lost count of the penalties and I thought we were into sudden death then. I was completely disorientated in this penalty shootout. But yeah, I mean, you just feel like the pendulum swung back again, hasn't it? And, you know, we obviously have to score. And it's, we just couldn't separate the teams over this tie. And it felt like, it felt like maybe at that point our race was run.
Well, our race was not run because we have the world's number one in between the sticks. We have Emi Martinez. Douglas Luiz takes care of his penalty to put Villa ahead again. And Benjamin Andre knows that he must score, but he is staring into the whites of the eyes of the World Cup winning penalty shootout, Lionel Messi loving extraordinaire, Dibu Martinez, who saves from Benjamin Andre, sending Aston Villa through, let me say it again for those at the back, to our first European semi-final since 1982. Andy, a word for Emi Martinez, the mad bastard, and a word for our overlord, Unai Emery, who has taken a side that were literally threatened by relegation less than 2 years ago, let's not forget, under the Steven Gerrard regime, and has now taken them, injuries and ACLs and suspensions and all, to a European semi-final. Just some words on Dibu and some words on Unai Emery, if you would, to close out the show.
Right, with Emi Martinez, if you'll indulge me, you're a wrestling fan, Craig. You recently went to WrestleMania.
I did.
You know how the great heels in wrestling, they don't have to do anything to get all the boos, all the jeers, to live rent-free in the fans' minds. This is Emi now. This is what he does. He had that crowd on strings the whole game, and when it got to penalties, he was absolutely in his wheelhouse, wasn't he? And I felt that he just conducted the whole thing. He doesn't have to do anything, all that stuff with the booking. It was by far nowhere near his worst antics in a penalty shootout or before a penalty, you know, that I've seen. But he literally doesn't have to do anything now, and he creates that aura around him and that thing around him.
He does.
And he saved the penalties. He did his job at the end of the day. He did it fair and square. And he's absolutely amazing in that situation. He's just astonishing. I've never known anything like it. I've never known a goalkeeper to have that kind of control over a penalty shootout. It's unbelievable.
Well, Mark Bosnich wasn't any kind of slouch, but this is, you know, with respect to Mark Bosnich and the wonderful career he had, Mark Bosnich isn't doing it and wasn't doing, and that's partly not because of Mark Bosnich, just because of the country he represented, but Mark Bosnich wasn't doing it in European quarterfinals. He wasn't doing it in Copa Americas, and he wasn't doing it in World Cup finals. This is a whole different bag of chips.
Yeah, he's just astonishing. He is a force of nature, Emi Martinez. And when it comes to a penalty shootout, I've never known anyone dominate a goalkeeper dominate a penalty, because essentially that everything is stacked against the goalkeeper in a penalty shootout. But with Emi, it's not. He is in control of that situation, and that is just unbelievable in terms of the mentality. He's so confident, and he's so good. At the end of the day, he backs it up every time with one or two big saves.
He backs it up. I said a few months ago that he'd now overtaken Bozzi and Friedel as my favourite, or the best Aston Villa goalkeeper. He's on a whole different streets ahead. This is a different conversation. Yeah. Andy, the boss, the Lord, the professor, Uncle Unai, what has this man not done in the past tense, because we're not over yet. Fourth in the Premier League, just beat Arsenal for the double, done the double over Arsenal, beat Man City for the first time in a generation at home and beat them convincingly. Fourth in the Premier League with all of this stuff, and we're in the semi-finals of European competition. What is going on at Aston Villa, and how do we put it into words for the ages? How do we absorb this, what's happening? And what is he doing, Andy? Come on.
Well, he's performing miracles, because although, yes, we have a good squad of players, we have a talented group, we've spent a lot on that squad, there's no doubt about that. But we haven't spent, top four money at all. We haven't, we're not in that category. And the big thing is that pretty much every pundit, every expert in quotation marks that has spoken about Aston Villa this season have said they won't be able to hang on to the Champions League spots and go far in Europe. And we're here approaching the end of April. And like you say, we're in the semi-finals in Europe and we're fourth in the Premier League. And we could go 6 points clear of Spurs if we went on Sunday. So it's miraculous. And to lose such big players on the eve of the season, two players like ACLs out for the season, gone. You know, first team players, former captain, absolute leader and legend at the club. And obviously Buendia, who was shaping up, I think, to have a really good season. We were missing Moreno and Ramsey already, which was our left side at the end of last season. We've had countless injuries. We've got another ACL. It's just astonishing. It's just, I can't believe, what he's done with that team. And bearing in mind as well, Pau Torres coming in, hasn't played in the Premier League before. Diaby hasn't. Tielemans has taken 6 months to get up to speed. Diego Carlos was coming back from an ACL himself. I just don't think,
it's otherworldly. It is hard to crystallize it into words. But I would say that for me, I'm incredibly grateful for Unai Emery and what he's doing, and I believe whatever happens now, probably worst case scenario, we go out in the semi-finals of Europe and finish fifth in the Premier League. That is probably our absolute worst case scenario for this season. And if you had told me that at the beginning of the season, and you told me Mings and Buendia and Kamara, et cetera, were all going to be missing, I wouldn't have just snatched your hand off. I think I would have ripped your arm off for that. And that's currently our worst case scenario. As bad as it can get for us. Our best case scenario, Andy, is literally the best season that we have had, certainly since 1982. And maybe given the nature of football now, given the competitive nature, given the that we have oligarchs and nation states involved in football, and that it is less of a level playing field than it's ever been, arguably the achievements that we're racking up here could be seen through an even more special prism of light. But we're not done yet, Andy, and we are on to Bournemouth. Now, I'm sure I haven't listened to this week's show yet because it only came out this morning and I didn't have time. But I'm sure you and Daniel did a Bournemouth preview on your show, the main show, Under a Gaslit Lamp.com, and the Gather Round podcast is live now on all your usual streaming platforms. Andy and Daniel taking the reins this week to review the Arsenal game, another momentous occasion in our recent history, just a few days removed from here. And I'm sure you did a Bournemouth preview, so we won't go too deep into Bournemouth here, but the Bournemouth match now changes complexion. We've got just done away from home 120 minutes plus a penalty shootout. You have to think that we know Luiz is suspended. You're going to have to think there must surely be rotation now, Andy, for the Bournemouth game. And that Bournemouth game, already a tough game, just gets that little bit harder by today's result. Or is it that we are now flying high and walking on water, and that the will just be carried through on pure emotional joy, and perhaps give Bournemouth a defeat, as they realistically have very little to play for, Andy? I mean, it could go either way. What's your interpretation based on what we've just gone through tonight on Thursday evening in the Europa League quarterfinal?
Well, Bournemouth have some absolute giants in their team, so we need to be a little bit better from set pieces for a start. But yeah, I think there might be some changes. I think they're going to have to rotate a little bit and be a little bit sensible with the players. They've got a week then till the Chelsea game, so you know that's a bit of a chance to get some rest, I suppose. But yeah, I think they'll be buzzing, obviously, and everyone will want to play. Matty Cash will keep his place, I'm sure, and probably Diego Carlos comes back in.
Maybe like Longley as well. Maybe, you know, Longley might be needed.
They might do that and give Torres a break. So there's a few options there. Obviously, not as many as we would have liked. So would have liked Moreno perhaps to have a game. And but I mean, such an important game. Really, really good opportunity to really get ahead of Spurs before their really difficult run. They're not playing at the weekend. Really good chance to get the points on the board, and we have to do it, really. And however we do it, it doesn't matter. I'm not going. I'll be there on Sunday. I'm not going there to be entertained. I'm going there to walk out and look at my Sky Sports app and look at the league table and see 3 extra points.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. It's incredible, an incredible night. And look, what will be against Bournemouth on Sunday. I hope the lads enjoy their evening and they rest up and recuperate, and we'll do the best that we can. Looking forward to the Bournemouth game, and then, as you say, a little bit of respite before the Chelsea game, and some chance to put some scoreboard pressure, as was the saying, onto Tottenham Hotspur. As we play twice more, as you mentioned before, they play again. Andy, thank you so much for joining me here on this historic day. An absolute incredible tie, an incredible win for Aston Villa. Just so proud of them. Just so happy to be a Villa fan this season. So enjoying everything so much. I just need to say that again out loud. We will look forward to seeing you again soon. Thank you all so much for listening. Up Unai Emery and up Aston Villa. Thank you and good evening. Enjoy your Thursday night. I promise you I will. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Gather Round Again, an Aston Villa podcast. Please like down below and... subscribe. Up the Villa.
Dalian Atkinson on one of those great runs. What a run by Dalian Atkinson. Atkinson again.
And it's Dwight Yorke.